Blog Talk Radio.
Angles on the Halloween end with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And by the way, that intro was awesome. You did it like really great with that. Very cool. All right.
Well,
yeah. Oh, what was that?
Let's get it kicking.
Absolutely. And here we have Tom. Welcome, Tom. Glad you could join us.
Oh, hi, thank you very much. Yeah, I just...
Hey, Tom.
If I've written for it, I really try to stay up for it.
Oh, no problem. We appreciate you, being writing for the show and for staying up enough to read your poem. Any little bit that people can give to any of our shows, we always appreciate. And let's go ahead and I've got your poem up, Tom. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Blame it on the hour. The Prince of Promise sings a tune harmonized well by the lake's loon. So many people want their dreams served free so they can take without having to pay for any or all of their needs. Love me, create magic spells, sweep me away in a chariot, and I will be yours until the bill comes due or I find out that it's only a mask and nothing true. Broken-hearted, she weeps and cries, sits in her window and fills it with sighs. She's a comma beside drama and a depression's saint. Be careful what you say. She could haunt you with hate. There is always a swirl to magic. It happens so fast. It seals your heart till you find it in the trash. The good guy is boring, the villain has dash. Your heart is soaring until the landings crash. It is a rhyme for a dollar, your fortune told for a dime. I'm not a scholar, but I understand what's on your mind. We danced to tango and the air was so hot. You thought I was worth a million, but that's not what you got. When the clock strikes midnight and the saints rule the house, the only real savior is the cock crowing with the dawn's fresh light. I remove my mask and you take off yours. We find to our surprise we are next door neighbors that we both tried to ignore. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got? Pam?
He dropped, fall off the face of the earth again?
I guess so. All right. Well,
it
I guess
happened in the other show.
I got to tell you, I like the ending. It's nicely twisted, and it's got a great amusing tone, especially when you think you've gotten a little hot under the collar and you did a bit of tangoing in the... what they call it? Oh God, what's that movie? That Tom Cruise movie with the masks and the scenery, where you think everything's a little bit different on that side of the world, and you find out, hell, you had a lot more fun than you bargained for, and it was with the neighbors to boot, which you both have been ignoring, which kind of gives it that note of thought. Well. Maybe if you got to find out who you were to begin with, you might have been enjoying a whole lot more, longer.
Okay, can anybody hear anybody?
I can hear.
I can hear
Rex?
You.
Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can hear.
Can anybody hear me on here?
I can hear
we
you.
We did hear you earlier. It was like you disappeared.
Okay, well, if anybody's listening and could post in Late Night Poets whether or not they hear anyone, either Rex, me, Tom,
Well, you were gone there a
really
while.
I really appreciate it. Ah, Science Sam
says she's here.
Oh, you are such a sweetheart. Okay. I don't know why I can't hear my co-host and our lovely guest, but I don't know if they can hear me. I'm just going to go ahead and kind of continue. And Rex, I'm probably going to have to hang up on you and call. But I'm not hearing you. Okay, Rex, can you talk?
Yeah, I'm talking. What you want?
Yes, we're here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now you're gone. Well, I guess maybe she hung
Am
up or she
no,
went deserting.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Tom?
Oh, I can hear you just fine.
Oh,
I mean,
okay,
you know.
Cool. Well,
it's all her.
In the meantime, I guess I can go pick up something to play with until she comes back. All right, see what we got.
She shouldn't be gone long.
She probably needs to refresh the studio, too. Just for
that might be true. You know, it's one of those, when in doubt, restart.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. I've got Trick or Treating by Nick Baker.
Okay.
While she's busy getting back in.
Okay, let's go for
Trick or Treating.
Nick Baker.
Let's go trick or treating. Let's go and have some fun. The season takes some beating once the party has begun. We'll all dress up as devils. We'll scream and howl and wail, ensuring sugar levels go way off the scale. But don't go to O'Grady at number 29. She's such a scary lady and makes the devil sign. Oh, let's go trick-or-treating. This holiday is cool. At 8 o'clock, I'm meeting fellow horrors outside school. We'll visit Mr. Vitus, and it will be immense. But he doesn't treat us, we'll just burn down his fence. We'll visit Miss Gandhi. We'll visit Mr. Borg. If we don't get no candy, we'll put them in the morgue. Last year, we had a riot at the rest home on the hill, refusing to be quiet for the terminally ill. But don't go to O'Grady with drapes of olive green. She's rather dark and shady and is very seldom seen. Tonight we're trick-or-treating. Halloween night really rocks. There's noise and overeating and perhaps some fatal shocks. The night is getting foggy and the streetlights can't be seen. Just a rather mangled moggy and some drapes of olive green. Now I'm knocking on O'Grady's. I have made a grave mistake. She will send me down to Hades, or she'll serve me in a cake. I don't like trick-or-treating. It's too scary for my taste. If I could start retreating from this cauldron in some haste. She's just added 7 vipers, and it's coming up to boil, and the contents of used diapers and a drop of olive oil. The mangled moggy's mewing, and a table set for Jeff suggests that my troubles are accruing, and O'Grady having dirt. End poem. Nicely done, Nick. Thank you very much.
there's a lot
of biting in that one. What'd you think, Tom?
Wasn't there always a house in your neighborhood where you were afraid to go to it?
I never had one of those, but yeah, I've heard of those stories.
Yeah. Well, I was in one neighborhood because I was in ninth, who was my ninth grade as a Navy brat, but I was in one neighborhood where they had a couple who dressed up so well as a witch and Frankenstein that they terrified half the kids in the neighborhood. And they must have done great because they scared you so badly you ran away before you got the candy. I mean, they were really good.
Oh, yeah. I remember that we used to have some houses that set up to do the full Halloween tour. They dressed up the front yard, the backyard, and you went like a little tour through the spooks and the galleries and stuff. Fun for the kids.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I think some people get off on Halloween more than they get off on Christmas.
Yeah, it throws a little bit more fun and play. There's a guy down the road from me. He's got little tombstones out his yard. One says Crisp P. Bacon. as one of the tombstones. He's got a bit of humor in his mean as well, which is cool.
Yeah, this year they're a bunch of people decided to have contests about who could do the best Halloween yard, and they're all over the place in this neighborhood now. I've never seen this neighborhood so dressed up for Halloween before. Get a little competition going, you know?
Oh, absolutely. People got to express themselves when they've been locked down for two bloody years. So you know what? I'm going to have some fun for Halloween.
We do one other thing because there's the neighborhood's so big in terms of, like, because it's 3/4 acre and 1 acre lots and it sprawls through a lot of woods. They go up to one end of the neighborhood in a public area and do what they call trunk or treat, which is people decorate the back ends of their cars. And the kids wander around between the cars and get candy. Man, everybody has a lot of fun. And that way nobody has to worry about their kid wandering off into the woods somewhere in the middle of the night and not coming home properly, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because there's room to get lost around here.
Pam, are you back? I am, yes. I had to hear
me. Live.
Awesome. Yeah, I had to hang up and call back like twice in order to be able to hear you guys. And I felt bad. I didn't get to hear your poem, Tom, except for like the first, I think, 5 lines or something like that.
Oh,
and
the goblin
must have
been getting your phone. Want me to do it again?
You can, but you don't have to.
I'm enough of an egotist to love reading my own stuff forever. I'm really bad.
Oh.
I totally admit it. I've been, one of these people who should have gone to Hollywood and tried at least.
Right. Well, at least you get to perform for us. So
yeah,
there's
always
that.
I'm not a total coward. Oh, that was cute.
Yeah, that's my barred owl. They like to laugh.
Oh, yeah, I've got a whole selection of Halloween sound effects packed away in my record collection.
Oh, fun. The one thing I wish we'd have that Tom's poem actually reminded me of, because I saw that you had a line, I think, where you mentioned of the loon, and I was thinking, oh, man, we should have had a loon in our sound effects for our sound that's gathered up. They have the most beautiful eerie cries. Yes, exactly.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. There used to be a whole bunch of them on the lake near my college when I went to college out in Portland, Oregon, and they would go off at night and just, they really did make it really sound weird.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And I also like the sound of the barn owls, like Rex has those around where he lives, and the whippoorwill is another great one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've always thought those are great sounds.
Absolutely. Rex, can I go ahead and comment on Nick's poem?
Yes.
All right. Well, that was, first of all, a great read. As always, he's got wonderful rhyme and flow. I like the little tidbits of humor in this. I like how it's like, as you guys were talking about, it's those houses that like to go extra scary, extra creepy, have the fright that, and it's the fun of doing the going through the horror house or to the scariest house in the neighborhood. And I really like how he had played with the names, and Mrs. Gandhi, Mr. Borg, Mr. Vetus. I don't know. It was just like you could tell he had a lot of fun writing with this. And then the mention of the drapes of olive green, you know, if you add like that kind of rusty orange to it, that dark orange, what was that, like the 1970s that those were really big colors? I remember there was a time period where like the olive green and the kind of rusty orange.
Autumn gold. It was autumn gold and avocado.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Everybody did it. Even my mother, who normally never follows any fad, did it. It was like, it just took over the universe.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. And I remember, like, there was this big fad when I was a kid back in the 80s and my grandmother went for it, was you had furniture that had, like, nature pictures on it. And it was like everybody did it. But, yeah, this
it's
is a
funny,
great fun
one. Take hold.
Yep. And,
Did you have a lady, did you have a house in your neighborhood which was a scary house?
Not really, but I never lived in town. I didn't ever live really far from a town, but I also, like, you know, like, the first place I lived, we basically, like, you know, like, when I was a kid, we lived in the middle of the woods. And then when I was about 15, we moved into a small town where the only business in the actual town was a bar/convenience store.
Oh, God, great combination.
Pick up your hammers and nails and get hammered in the process.
Right, absolutely.
Exactly. Yep. All right, what do you say, Rex? Shall we go on to the next poem?
Yep.
All right. And up next we have Time to Put On Some Scary Masks by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. How to cover my ass took a long time to learn. Even now I yearn to trust my shitty fellow man. But no can do, baby, because people lie. We all lie. When I give my inner guard the day off, deciding it's safe to expect truth from humans that day, man, my ass gets fucked in the deepest way. And then I ask myself, why? Why did I do that? And I heard that faith is just another four-letter word. And seeing is simply an illusion. We barely see what we look at and rarely hear what we listen to. Our eyes have been blurry, drunk, weary, teary, blinded, and tired, being stupidly wired enough to think what you view is true. Shame on goddamn idiot you. Split the baby and favor only one shoe. Now fuck off. Time to put on some scary mask. Go knock on random friggin' doors and ask strangers for candy. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like the bite in the end of that. And, you know, it comes off not just comical, but it comes off as, do you really actually do that? Isn't that kind of counterproductive, asking strangers for candy while knocking on doors you don't know about? It puts such a twisted note to the flavor of the piece itself. And I like it. All right, Tom, what'd you think?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I agree with you, you know. Every Halloween you heard about the guy who put razor blades in the apples and handed it to little kids. You know, or, you know, gave out X-Lax instead of chocolate, that kind of thing. I don't know. I never ran anybody who actually did that, but I heard about it all the time. It is funny, you know, because you're told don't talk to strangers when you're a little kid, but come Halloween, you hit every house in the neighborhood. The goal is to get the bag full. And with five younger brothers and sisters, I promise you, the one with the most candy won that year. But I love the way she did it. She set it up perfectly. So when she got to that end, it just was like the cynicism really worked for a sharp, you know, piercing kind of humor. I thought you did a great job.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Tom. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, this was a lot of fun to read. I tell you, no one does snark and bite like Julie does. You know, I like how she mentions, you know, when I give my inner guard the day off, then it's safe to expect truth from humans that day. Nope. That does not happen. We barely see what we look at and rarely hear what we listen to. I thought there was like a really nice tidbit of wisdom in here. You know, and I like how this has that sarcastic edge to it. You know, it also has that great social message of how you really just cannot expect the truth from most people. But, you know, to me, the ending was just spot on and definitely had that twisted humor that made me laugh. Because you think about it, there's like just no other time of year where we would dare knock on a stranger's door or tell our children to knock on a stranger's door and ask them for candy. So definitely an excellent write. Enjoyed the humor and the raw and edginess to it, and it was very well done.
What we got next?
All right. Let's see what we got next. Did I grab the next poem? I meant to. I don't think I did. Nope, I did not. Let me go grab the next poem. And hold on. Got to erase this one. And
right off the conveyor belt.
What's that?
It's right off the conveyor belt.
Yep, exactly.
You know, sort of like I Love Lucy packing chocolates.
Oh my God, I can still remember that scene.
That was a classic.
Mouth full of chocolate, face full of chocolate. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's like trick or treat.
Yeah, her and Ethel were awesome together. All right, and up next we have No Demons in Hell by Martha Gettle, and we have a recording for that one, so let me find that, and here we go.
No Demons in Hell by Martha Gettle. Politicians have always told us lies, but now they wear no disguise. Right out loud they say outrageous things, and so many people believe the song they sing. Now politicians have always taken bribes, now they grab that money in plain sight. They promise so much you never can deliver, then it's like, tough luck, cry me a river. There's no demons in hell, it's plain to see. They have all moved in next to you and me. No, they're not living in hell anymore. You can find them in the mansion next door. If the devil is the father of lies, you see, a lot of his kids can be found working in D.C. They are all multimillionaires and want more. Any moral compass, they kicked out the door. There's no devils in hell, it's plain to see. They've all moved in next to you and me. No, they're not living in hell anymore. You can find them in the mansion next door. Now we have someone just to check and see how many lies that one has told to you and me. Things are not the way they used to be before. There's no shame in lying to the people anymore.
Great read, Martha. Thank you very much. And that was a great piece. Enjoyed it. All right, Pam, you get the lead off.
This is a really clever take on the prompt. As always, I enjoyed hearing her sing. I like that she wrote, I am guessing to the prompt, there are no devils in hell, they're all here, by I think Shakespeare, but I can't remember for sure. But what I like that, you know, she took this instead of like taking it like a mythological way, or you know, she went into a modern day twist of the morals of politicians, and I really like this is great all the way through, but I really like now politicians have always taken bribes, now they grab that money in plain sight. I also like if the devil he is the father of lies, you see a lot of kids can be found working in D.C. I like the honest, straightforward style of this, wonderful rhyme and flow. And I also, like, it has a bit of a punch to it where, like she says, no, they're not living in hell anymore. You can find them in the mansion next door. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Tom, how about you?
Well, I'm sitting here really amazed at how well Pam could pick up every line that I was going to use and use it before I get to it. It's just amazing. That woman has a psychic ability beyond belief. But I this was funny right from the start. Politicians have always told us lies, but now they wear no disguise. I thought that was a great opening line. Because it's just right there in front of you, and all this, it's like smacks you right in the face. I agree that, you know, with the light in there, they're all multimillionaires and want more. Any moral compass they kicked out the door, I thought was another great one. This she managed to make me laugh while at the same time just hitting it on the nose, just straight down the line. And once again, I can only commend her on having the guts to sing, because I'd never take that chance. Nobody'd ever recover. The damage would be permanent.
Oh, shit, Tom. That was too funny. Thank you. I'll tell you what, she started off outside the chorus. She started her stanzas off pretty powerfully. The one you hit on, I've always told us lies, but now they wear no disguise. Then the next one, politicians have always taken bribes. Now they grab that money in plain sight again. If the devil, he is the father of lies, you see, a lot of his kids can be found working in D.C. Yes, and around the world and other capitals, too. So she hit all the right notes and played it out and laid it out for everybody to see just exactly how horrific it is in the political world today, and as bad as it is, all their shit is laid out for everyone to see now. That all the lies, they can't cover up anything no more. And she did a damn good job. I had a funny piece of that. Thank you very much, Martin. That was a blast. All right, Pam. Gas? You having a gas attack?
Well, I gotta go. So you gotta take care.
All right. You have a good night, Tom. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. That was that. This is what I sound like.
That's the werewolf who's looking for some food, snacks, treats. Give me some of your goddamn candy. I'll take a hand instead.
Throw a handful of candy at the werewolf. Oh, my gosh. All right. So up next we have Something Wicked This Way Comes by T. Perry 898. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Something Wicked This Way Comes by T. Perry 898. Is it horror I am tasting, velvet sweets upon my tongue? Inside hell it was created, and from madness it was sprung. It's upon me and commands me, murder has no place to hide. Something lurking deep within my soul, consuming me inside. In a thrice I pluck its eyeballs, so this creature cannot see. Shredded veins upon my fingers make me gag in misery. I shall slice its foul-infested tongue and taste it deems to speak. It shall feast upon my anger and the silence that I seek. Let me snatch each bony finger, lest it try to wring my neck. I shall grab the thing's attention, it shall offer me respect. When I steal its evil blackened heart, I'll terminate its quest and simply use my bloodied hands to tear it from my chest. Free at last, I'm free at last from something lurking deep inside, and the police shall report me as another suicide. No more dark incessant whispers, I have silenced Satan's drum. All the silence, all the steeple, something wicked this way comes. And boom.
Awesome read there, Rex.
I had a nice ringing tone to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, were you commenting first?
No, go ahead.
Or did you want me to? Okay. First of all, excellent rhyme and flow here. I like that he incorporates the quote from Shakespeare's Something Wicked This Way Comes into the right. And wonderful visceral imagery. And I like how this he goes one at a time, like through the body parts, like I pluck its eyeball so this creature cannot see. Shredded veins upon my finger make me gag in misery. Let me smash each bony finger lest it tries to wring my neck. I shall grab the thing's attention. It shall offer me respect. And you really get an idea of how horrific this battle is. And, you know, and then I like how he has that twist at the end. And that twist, there's very much a kind of an almost like an Edgar Allan Poe feel to this rite. I really like where he says, and the police shall, they shall report me as another suicide. So I like that you realize in that ending stanza that the struggle is with himself, with the monster, the demon that he holds within and with his own thoughts. It's kind of like realizing that you're watching someone's, you know, descent into madness. And it's just a wonderful dark rite and very well done.
Absolutely. I like it's got a nice sing-song quality to it. Is it horror I am tasting, velvet sweet upon my tongue? Inside hell it was created, it's a madness, it was sprung. It's upon me and commands me, murder has no place to hide. Something lurking deep within my soul, consuming me inside. It's got a really nice tone to it in the length of the lines, right? What is 14, 15 count syllables? With a little touch let me smash each bony finger lest it tries to wring my neck. I shall grab the thing's attention, shall it offer me respect. When I steal its evil blackened heart, I'll terminate its quest and will simply use my blooded hands to tear it from my chest. So there's an understanding in that thought that something wicked this way comes, it lurks within.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And I'm glad you brought up the syllable count per line because, you know, oftentimes you don't see people always doing, like usually they tend to stick it seems oftentimes, and that isn't everybody, but you see like between like 6 and 9 syllables. So someone taking on the challenge of metered rhyme and like about 15 syllables per line is I think really cool.
Poe reference to the Raven to get that long extra syllable count running through a piece at work.
Yeah, that is actually a really good point because that is I know a lot of people take on the challenge of writing. I don't know if it's called a parody, but writing in the same meter in rhyme as the Raven, which is something I know you have done. It is definitely if you're looking to learn about the meter that has a longer syllable count, then yeah, you're right there, Rex. The Raven is definitely a good one to look at. All right. Up next, we have Demonic Hell by Betty Page, and it goes like this. Hell is here on earth, demons freely roaming round, torturing their prey. Vampires bite flesh, then fly away from the scene. Blood drips from their fangs. Snowy owls in flight, soaring over hungry wolves, creep from dark forests. Cinematic fright, demons, ghosts play with our mind, erotic touching. Tempting wicked sins, perverting our naked flesh. Constant temptation, real love's out of reach. We beg to love and be loved, tortured by cruel courts. All injustice reign, our resources fading swift, broke empty pockets, smashing our spirits. Every day is the same quest, no validation. Lost, so alone now, broken, abandoned, abused. Life on cruelest streets. Searching to find love, I'm bleeding out, yet alive, snow with no prints, end poem.
Great read, and thank you very much. Another one who takes all the hell is empty because the demons are all here. And she bites on this a couple of ways. Demons roaming freely, vampires biting flesh, the snowy owls, the cinematic fright, hits on a load of thoughts in the first few stanzas, then gets into a little bit more. Tempting wicked sin, perverting our naked flesh, constant temptations, and hits on the note of the devil itself. Tortured by cruel courts, all injustices reign, our resources fading, swift, broke, empty pockets. And she hits on the back end of the of what's going, just like Martha did, a little different route with the brokenness of the system. Smashing spirits, life on the cruelest streets, bleeding out yet alive. That notation of, yes, the millionaires who moved in next door, they're all the demons loose on the street. But Betty kind of went the same thought with a different role.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I like how she took us to the life on the streets, to what it's like for people who struggle with abuse and addiction. I know she meant this metaphorically, but did you know there's actually places you can pay to go to where people pay to go there to have sex with ghosts?
Okay. That sounds like a whole lot of nothing on the white sheet.
I just imagine some pervert like wearing a sheet with eye holes cut out going, "Boo, I'm a ghost here to make sweet love to you. Boo." See, that's what I imagine. But anyway, Betty's poem. What I really like about Betty's poem is that it works both on a realistic level and a metaphorical level. And honestly, each one of these short stanzas is almost like a poem, almost like a haiku, a poem in themselves, with the use of imagery And it really brings you into the darkness with you know, tempting the wicked sins, pervert our naked flesh, constant temptation, real love's out of reach. And that's why I think, you know, the whole idea of the demons and ghosts playing with their minds, erotic touching, really works well on a metaphorical level, because it's that whole idea of people feeling dead inside because they're just trying to use physical pleasure to fill the emptiness. I also really like how she goes, and you had mentioned this, like the injustices, the politicians, all injustices reign, our resources fading swift, broke, empty pockets. It's really has that whole feeling to me of how everybody is out for themselves. Nobody's paying attention to, you know, how the world is falling apart, you know, for the poorest of the people. You know, this is just a strong write all the way through and very well done.
All right, what we got next?
All right. Up next we have Brainless Ramblings, Enter at Your Own Risk and Peril by Naomi Sarah. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So let me find that, and all right, looking, I know it's here, maybe, there it is, okay, found it.
Oh, just rambling on, methinks I don't know where I put my brain. I try to put words together in such a way as to express my innermost feelings, trying to prise open a gap to embrace the paradox, which is this person named I, and walk the tightrope with panache. Oh, yeah. Well, that started out not too bad, but holy shit, where do I go from there? I just get jumbled up syllables. My thoughts drift away to Neverland, and nothing comes out. Well, except for this right here, which, well, let's face it, is disintegrating into absolute nonsense. I'm just totally lost in the dreck of my daily life, which dulls my spirit, leaving me stranded in the in-between spaces. Feeling like putty, filling the gaps between now and when something, anything happens. Fancy lines to say basically, I don't have a damn thing to write about. My mind wanders about. I ask myself how many new medicines can be discovered in plants, animals, insects, bacteria, and all the species of living beings. Ask myself if I really am kind-hearted. Most people think I am. But maybe I'm just an infected, filthy bug. Lowell. Can we put Lowell in a poem? Oh, and heck. Lowell. Perhaps that's why most men I date disappear. I'm just some slimy serial bacteria killer. They all die of a slow, agonizing disease. I wish. Oh, my crazy mind just won't shut up. A never-ending pulse race. Like knowing you don't want to jump off a cliff, but not being able to talk yourself down from it. So smack! Well, there I go. Now I'm a bloody, dismembered corpse, lying in a deep pit somewhere outside of La La Land. Darn, I'm thinking that it's as if I can't find my brain, as if I went and trumped myself. Pretty sure someone, probably more than one, must have already used that line. I could be cool. Oh, it would be cool. Yeah. If the gods carried guns around, they could shoot at the friggin' sun, and I'd finally go the hell to bed. But hey, lucky me, it's fucking Halloween, and all those little buggers will come snotting all over my door, keeping me up half the night. Geez, I'm freaking my own self out right now. sure won't win no Pulitzer with this one. Well, maybe if I take out the Trump line.
Great read, Sarah. Naomi, thank you very much for the sound credit. It was greatly appreciated. And, yeah, that's a pretty nasty looking picture there, inverted and funky.
That is. I like that creepy picture. I'm actually going to have to find out who that artist is and look up more of their work. Very
Eric,
cool.
Well, what do you think?
I like this, and I found it so relatable. Honestly, like, a lot of my poems before I post them are a bunch of rambling, and I like how this has that conversational tone. Like, you feel like you're just sitting there at the kitchen table having coffee with Naomi and listening to her talk. And so many clever lines in here. Trying to prize open a gap to embrace the paradox, which is this person named I, and walk the tightrope with panache. Oh, yeah. And it definitely, you know, it's difficult walking that tightrope, finding that balance. I like how this has that sardonic bite to it. I even like the questions, like laugh out loud. Or can we put LOL? Can we put LOL in a poem? Oh, and heck, LOL. You know, like, you know, question, you know, like, what are the poetry police going to say about this? It would be cool if the gods carried guns around. They could shoot out the frickin' sun and I'd finally go the hell to bed. You know, that to me is just the kind of somebody who struggles with insomnia, who's not getting sleep. That to me is so clever and expressing, like, how we just want that sun to go away, you know, how we just, you know, want nighttime to last a little longer. And, of course, the geez, I'm freaking my own self out right now. Sure won't win no Pulitzer Prize with this one. But see, that's the great thing. That's the great thing about poetry and the diversity of poetry is, you know, some of them are just meant to unload and have some fun with. And, you know, I really thought that she did that very well. And again, and another thing I like is that she said, my thoughts drift away to Neverland. I thought that was just an excellent line. And also, perhaps that's why most men I date disappear. I'm just some slimy serial bacteria killer. I don't know why. That kind of dark humor just, you know, it cracks me up. I enjoy it. So I thought this was very well done.
Yeah, I found the meandering tone deliberate because she's done that first stanza, and then that started out not too bad, but holy shit, where do I go from there? And it hits on that note of you get that first little impetus done, and all of a sudden your mind drifts into something else, like the jumbled up syllables, the thoughts, the never, never land, and you're disintegrating into absolute nonsense. All of a sudden, you get a little miff. Then the thought hits on the dullness of life and what's going on. You feel like putty filling the gaps between now and when something, anything happens. So, and then you get the next bloom that kind of hits on maybe I'm just an infected, filthy bug. Again, another nice note to something that hits on, and again, a little bit of drift, a little bit of something in, a little bit more drift. It hits on, and I like the thought with the bloody dismembered corpse lying in deep pit somewhere outside La La Land. That kind of hits a nice notion of thoughts too. But the gods carried guns for the share of the friggin' sun, and I'd finally go the hell to bed. Kind of hits on that note of what's his name? Bukowski, a touch in the rambling, the thought hitting on different notes, playing out the scene itself. And then just yeah, those fucking Halloween, all those little buggers will come snotting all over my door, keep me up half the night. It kind of hits on his tone of voice as well. All
right.
Right. Here we go again.
Yeah, I asked. Now you don't have trick or treaters out where you live, do you?
Huh?
Yeah.
Don't have what?
The what?
I don't have what?
Trick or treaters.
Oh, I don't see any.
Yeah. I don't. In town. I don't even do that. I have As Witches Crack by Jim Bellamy. And go ahead, Rex, give that a read.
As Witches Crack by Jim Bellamy. Oh, when once an apple tree may die, then endless empires will bob for eyes, greening off scarecrow vision, and seizing felon All Hallows' wife in prisons, men that lost ghostly cries. As bird shaped then scratches, teeter inside night's dual thrill, and I am bred from death still, and full school towns sprawl for bad diamonds as witches crack, and backsides rip inside clap, floating venal trick and treats. Me and Madam Naples have been filling poppies with veins. Oh, me and Master Naples have been filling naked pumpkin rain, and as raining rivers wrap mummies, and cold cave coasts pressed for dopey drunk dead women and baby's cradle scare men shut. And both. Okay. All right. Witch's Crack. Is this the crack of the witch as a whole, or is this the actual crack of the witch?
That is a really good question.
Considering she's a seizing sullen All Hallows' wife and prisons men and lost ghostly cries, I think they're all sitting in the crack of her ass.
That could, let's see here. Thought it meant...
Bad diamonds as witches crack and backsides rip inside clap, floating venal trick and treat. Yeah, there's a little nasty thing inside that old weather-beaten, cobweb-ridden, nasty bit of essence.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely, I figured it had to do with, witches just losing their mind. They finally just snap and lose mind. I had to look up venal. Showing or motivated by susceptibility to bribery. Okay. Well, that's cool to know. I really like this all the way through, and there is definitely some really dark parts, with that Bad Diamonds as Witches Crack. Me and Madam Naples have been filling toffees with veins. Oh, me and Master Naples have been filling naked pumpkin rain, and as raining rivers wrap mummies. I really liked how this has almost like a stream of consciousness feel to it. And there's that work visionary and dopey dreamt dead women and babies cradled scare men shut. I really like that he ends shuts. And adding in the babies cradled really just adds a wonderful creepy vibe to it. Also, dreaming of scarecrow vision. I thought that was a really cool line in the whole idea that he's absolutely nothing, and yet we put it up somebody who's something that sees everything, that watches over the crop. I also thought, well, maybe it refers to the Wizard of Oz scare, like the whole idea of having a brain. And I thought that was a kind of on reference. So definitely a very cool light. And what did, I'd like to hear, I'm obviously looking forward to your thoughts, Rex.
I think the witch's crack is New York City. Oh, when once an apple tree may die, and endless empires will bob for eyes, dreaming of scarecrow vision, and of seizing sullen old Hallow's wife in prison, men and lost ghostly cries, the death of New York and its teetering relish on the thought of just walking into no man's land unwisely.
I like that. Yeah, and that's a great idea. The witches.
Filling toffees with veins. Well, how about filling veins with toffees, the poison of heroin? And then the witch's crack, backside rip inside crap, floating venal trick or treat, a poison that they can pick up so easily on the street.
Ah, yeah. Floating venal trick and treat. Yeah, there really is that kind of sense of it, the dark, and all that. Oh, very cool.
All right, what we got next?
Let's see what we got next. Well, that one's really cool. Okay. Oh, I know. I was going to grab the next one and get through. All right. Tale of Baba Yaga by Captain B2. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So let me find that. And here we go.
The Tale of the Baba Yaga poem. Beneath the waning moon's rise, in a gloom as black as pitch, neath star-pocked midnight skies, stood the forest of Baba Yaga, the witch. Massed trees like desolate towers, where the wind did wail and groan, dwelt legendary ancestral powers in the hut of the infamous crone. All Hallows was an ensorcelled season, where woods and glen hailed fey doom. The witch prowled with an evil reason, creeping through the arboreal gloom. She was an ancient terror that made the blood run chill. Unfortunates venturing nigh in error fell cursed and lost their will. She stalked the peasant offspring, to devour them was her goal. To their parents the children would cling, for fear that Baba Yaga would swallow them whole. All doors were bolted, shutters shut tight. Terrified peasantry all knew her story, knowing traveling the forest at night would yield the witch her quarry. Each night with the vigilant village folk, all cower behind bolted doors, while hearth fires they fearfully stoke, listening for the hut that walked on all fours. All beware the malevolent crone who flies the midnight skies. She rides a mortar and pestle and seeks you with her fiery eyes. She's the terror of the deep wood, as all Russian peasant children know. They mind Mama and Papa as they should, for the dark wood is not somewhere they should go. Beneath the waning moon's rise, in a gloom as black as pitch, neath star-pocked midnight skies stands the forest of Baba Yaga, the witch. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got? You like the picture?
Oh, I like this. I like this. I like that she went with the Russian folklore of Baba Yaga. I'm glad she made a SoundCloud because I cannot read that font at all. And, of course, well, I would have just signed it over to you if she hadn't made a SoundCloud. I like that she did the AB, I think it's called, rhyme scheme. I like that she goes into details. You know, great attention to details. She stalked the peasant offspring to devour them was her goal. To their parents, the children would cling, for fear that Baba Yaga would swallow them whole. And, you know, this is a great reminder that stories like that were started and passed along by word of mouth and through generations to keep children from wandering off, to keep children from behaving. And, I also really like she's a terror of the deep wood, as all Russian peasant children know. They mind mama and papa as they should, for the dark wood is not somewhere they go. Again, an excellent reminder of the original, the dark tales like this were created for a reason. I like that she brings us, a write about a well-known character. So really excellent write and very well done.
Well, I thank you, Pam. The Baba Yaga. Kind of funny. Most people didn't even know what a Baba Yaga was up until a few years back when Keanu Reeves came out with that movie, John Wick. They said, are we going to send out the Baba Yaga? No. He's the one you send out to kill the Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga is that bit of lore that runs the same gamut as the Grimm's fairy tale. It's designed to keep the children out of the forest and the dark arenas at night, to scare the living shit out of them. And Baba Yaga is always used as that motif of, you don't behave yourself, Baba Yaga will come and take you in the middle of the night. And she hits on all those notes that run with the with Baba Yaga, the flying around in a mortar and pestle, and the house on chicken legs and the skulls that align the fences. All those notes that work well for Baba Yaga. And she does go pretty much after the children. She likes the nice, succulent, fresh meat, although she does take other souls on occasion. And she is usually one of a trio of sisters, always comes in threes. Just like that, by the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes.
Absolutely. I remember, too, that the show Supernatural had an episode. I mean, they probably had more than one, but only one that I've seen that had Baba Yaga in it.
I don't think I heard about that one, although it wouldn't surprise me considering they hit every other Monster Planet on the 17 years they were running.
Right. Yeah, I've never got to watch that show consistently, but the episode I have seen, I really enjoyed.
Most of thought was angels and vampires and the devil, with thrown in for
angels,
wendigos. Seen one with jinn. There's all types of other manifestations.
Yeah, and I think there was a trickster that came back like regularly. They had that. The trickster, mostly, like you said, it was devils, angels, vampires, that kind of stuff, I watched the other day the episode where they got lost in TV land, which is kind of a corny episode, but it's also, like, really funny how it, like, mocks the different kinds of TV shows, like the cop drama and the sitcom. That was really cool.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And up next we have Day Number 67 by Chamath Akalanka. And it goes like this. Humans are shit. Shit, shit, shit. Full of shit. SpongeBobs are my friends. They suck everything. I've gotten rotten inside. The dark wallpaper holds me. My words have become a mere reciting from their lips. They knock every evening, each pounds heavy, which brings in me each time the desire to find slumber inside a crack. And the things inside the vases they call flowers are dying of thirst, which brings me once again to the awesome windy oceans to back to hold once more. Sometimes I begin to spill some of it out, but I get sober again. I heard the knocking once more, has a tear shed and soaked to my pumpkin shirt. Loud thumping on the door makes me fear for the possibility of a door lost that takes my time once again. Another day more lost to the windy possibility, the beach. Any poem?
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I like the abstract thoughtness. It goes down in the middle, well, down two-thirds way down. Where is it? Sometimes I begin to spill some of it out, but I get sober again. So there's a note to the thought of why some of this is going. SpongeBob's all my friends. They suck everything. I've gotten rotten inside. The dark wallpaper holds me. My words have become a mere sighting from their lips. They knock every evening, even if each pound heavy. In me, each pound of desire finds slumber inside a crack. There's a note to self-loathing. Plus, the humor in this is pretty funny. Pumpkin shirt. Door lost to the wind of possibility, the beach. It starts out with SpongeBob and ends up at the beach. So there's a little bit of lostness in this, and the thought of wanting to actually be light enough and bounce enough to enjoy a day at the beach, maybe. What did you think?
Well, first of all, great comment there. I like how you mentioned that there's kind of this sense of self-loathing and then, you know, just, you know, feeling lost. I really get the idea of somebody that doesn't like being at the beach. I did like the reference to SpongeBob's are my friends. They suck everything. You know, it's almost like that whole idea of having those kind of friends that, like, leech off of you. I also like the reference to the pumpkin shirt because I felt like it was kind of that whole idea of trying to fit in with everybody else who's doing the fall things, drinking the pumpkin spice, you know, dressing up for Halloween, and you're just trying to fit in, but you really don't feel like you do, and you really don't want to fit in because... And it has this kind of irony to it because he opens up with humans are shit, 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 shit. And yet here he is, you know, his best friends are people that, you know, suck the life out of you. His shirt is pumpkin orange, you know, to fit in with the season. And you know, they're really just to me is this kind of humorous idea of the extremes we'll go to. To please people we don't even like. So just a clever write and very well done.
All right, what we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Blood Count by Rich F. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Bloodlines bubble, boiling, ever toiling. Baseful bells, full-fashioned, of a baser metal, tolling. Flooding, flowing, follow fated pathways. Pursuing temporal tramlines. Spatial, streamlined streetlights. Crisscross chaos. Lamenting unavoidable and unavoided gains and loss. Prospect theories drawn in S-shape relief. Drawn and destroyed beyond brittle, brutal relief. Belittled and enlarged, writ large upon his subtle sky. Critical path in the primordial cosmic chaos. Heavenly hopes that rise and die. How to make sense of it all? These forking paths of choice and destiny that drag me down and raise me up. To choose or not to choose at the crisscross jumbled junction, spaghetti junction, where brainwaves spark yet fail to function properly. My improper impropriety, incoherent, drunken sobriety, in my sad, sweet stupor, making a semblance of sense from his nocturia nonsense. And now, in depths of despair and heights of ecstasy, we travel these arteries in vain. Vainglorious, we seek our dismal destinies. And as we seek, many miles away, a Transylvanian coffin lid creaks open. Vampire Venal sinks his fetid fangs into his morning coffee, bubbling hot, two sugars russet red. This corpuscular creature waiting, waiting, waiting for his time to come. Midnight madness, October, spatial sadness. At last, his happy Halloween gladness. Count abroad, flying faster now. Sable swishing, how his wings beat out a sinister drum tattoo in the breathless, hushed autumn air. Into hallowed, hyperspatial, kaleidoscopic pictures of chaos. Planets collide, supernova explosions everywhere. Single-minded, sparing, swooping along his chosen pathway, the one true pathway. All other pathways fade and crumble into hyperspace. He is in control of time and space, all known multiverses collapsing into one. This is his universe now. At last, he follows fated future pathways, blue blood pumping through his vampire veins, victim d'amour in sight. Swoops through yonder window, and in the misty, moistened moonlight, he wraps her in his cosmic cloak, comforts her. Blood-red vorpal vampire teeth, piercing passions, pain in the neck, sharp, acute, anesthesia, oh so cute. and at the dying of the sun, they sink. Entangled in this astral pastor parcel mud. The one point, the still point, of the spinning infinity, multiverse destiny, they share their cosmic blood. Fickle, feral, flowing, pumping, pumpkin, Halloween, hearts now jumping. Tortured, tattered, taffeta, true love. And finally, their forever fate, eternal, infernal. Their bodies, bloodied, battered, bruised, become as one.
Great read, Rich. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Oh, this is quite the in-depth piece. And Rich took that quote from Dracula. Do you believe in destiny? That even the powers of time can be altered for a single purpose, to find the one true love? Tackle that one pretty well, offering up the bottom end to this. That last stanza was really good. And I kind of was surprised we managed to get in there. Vorpal vampire teeth, Vorpal. Nice touch from the original pose from the Jabberwocky. Like that, Rich. And this thought of vampire seeking true love, and instead, well, not just the blood, but actually a mate for open-ended thought to play with. I like this, the Transylvanian coffin lid creaks open, and vampire Venus sinks the spit of fangs into his morning coffee, bubbling hot, two sugars, rusted red. Nice touch. A little playful with that one. I like that. All right, Anne, what you got?
I have to agree. Yeah, he had some wonderful lines in here, and you can tell he had a lot of fun writing this. It was truly epic. You know, I have to say that Dracula is quite the romantic. I think some men could take lessons from him. I like how he gave this a sci-fi vibe, with like he is in control of time and space, all-knowing multiverses collapsing into one. This is the universe now. Now all of a sudden I have in my head doing the time warp from that one movie, the musical. You know what I'm talking about. The one that Sweet Transvestite is from.
Rocky Horror?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, that song from the Rocky Horror movie, the time warp. I've got that going through my head. Of course, as always, he's got wonderful alliteration and play with words. I like that bloodlines bubble boiling, ever toiling. I like the idea that it's not just about the blood that flows from where the vampires bite, but rather the idea of generations. That's kind of what the idea what I get from it. And, you know, I also really like, well, because it mentions blue blood pumping through his vampire veins, victims of a mooring sight. He says blue blood. You know, I instantly, you know, I think of somebody who was perhaps a upper crust, a rich person, and then became a vampire, like a kind of a vampire Casanova. And I like where he says, entangled in this astral pasta parcel mud, the one point, the still point of the spinning infinity, multiverse destiny. I like how this is a vampire story, but it's also a story about, like, that we can relate to in the idea that, you know, if you could control time, what would you do with that power? Oh, and I like that he puts together stuff that you think of as dark but beautiful at the same time, like hollowed hyperspatial kaleidoscopic pictures of chaos. Kaleidoscopic pictures of chaos, I think, is a wonderful line. And there was another one I really liked. Oh, where was that? ding it, ding it, ding it. It was the one that mentioned
the string theory
spaghetti.
Part.
What's that?
That was the string theory part.
Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah, I really liked that part with the mention of the spaghetti. And the string theory, now that's the theory that was used on the show Quantum Leap, correct?
Quantum Leap.
Do you remember the show Quantum Leap?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that part of it? Like, I mean, I'm not saying that show invented that theory. I know it's an actual theory, but I thought if I remembered right.
Probably the Big Bang Theory, where they rolled in string theory and everything else.
Right. Well, okay. Cool. But I have to say, you know, this is one of those rites that grabs your attention and keeps it. And I like how he takes a vampire story and gives it a twist. So this is definitely very well done. All right. And let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have The Howls of the Wolf Moon by Lord of Deeds. And go ahead, Rex.
The Howls of the Wolf Moon by the Lord of Deeds. There's neither air nor its movement on the moon. Hence, no sound is heard by moon's ear, but the wolves think the moon can lip-read. The moon fills her own cup more and more every night. Wolves drink it and raise a howl of drunkenness. Eventually, drunken wolves suppose that the moon herself has fallen into the cup. It means the coup of darkness was happening. Superior and inferior positions are swapped. The romantic bow is evident in the dark sky, and the arrows of moonlight are no longer thrown by the eyelashes of night. Thrown arrows are collected, and new targets are set with the wolf moon spell in January. Yeah, the wolves have risen from their statues until the position of wolves has reached the throne, and the position of the moon has fallen on the carpet under wolves' feet. Now, the moon is howling to affect the wolves. Wall Street wolves are so happy that they crack walnuts with their tails, and the stock market is green grassland. But the shareholders of this world won't take anything with them. The autumn of gamblers comes in the blink of an eye, and the stock market turns redder than blood. Wall Street wolves become cats after defeat. They want to explode with anger. The moon's face girl pours cold water on them until their anger subsides. But street cats always have aquagenic pruritus. Wall Street guys are allergic to water, not wall. And boom. Prompt 13. There are nights when the wolves are silent and only the moon howls. By George Collins. That was different. What would you think?
Well, I like different. You know, I like when people think outside the box, and Lord of the Beats definitely seems to do that. I like the moon fills her own cup more and more every night. Wolves drink it and raise a howl of drunkenness. I like the reference to the moon being female, and there's kind of almost a dark sensuality within those lines. And I like the line, superior and inferior positions are swapped. The whole idea of people, nobody knowing their place anymore. The alpha wolf no longer being the alpha wolf. And I think the January is the wolf moon, if I remember right, which would make a really clever reference to that one line. And new targets are set with the wolf moon spell in January. The wolves have risen from their statues until the position of wolves has reached the throne. You know, there's a really, to me, a really epic mythological feel to that. But also kind of, I feel like there's also some, it works well for the whole, for modern day, for, you know, the, like, you can only poke at the pack for so long before they're going to rise up and tear you apart. I really like then that he went into the references of Wall Street, the Wall Street wolves, and the stock market is grassland, but the shareholders of this world won't take anything with them. That whole idea that the idea of the cash cows, you know, grazing upon the grassland, making money that, you know, and fighting over money and possessions that they won't be able to take with them. I also like the use of the word aquagenic pruritus. Now, Wall Street guys are allergic to water, not wall. I think that's really interesting. I think maybe it's, to me, the whole idea of they're allergic to the idea of keeping themselves morally clean. You know, I just felt like this really had a lot of intelligent bite to it. I also like the Autumn of Gamblers comes in the blink of an eye. You know, of course, you got Kenny Rogers going through my head right now. Autumn representing like being near the end of life. And when you take chances, how quickly that end of life comes. And, of course, Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, it kind of hints. It does walk a nice tether to the wolf itself. Where was it? The moon fills her own cup more and more every night. Wolves drink it and raise a howl of drunkenness. Eventually, a drunken wolf supposes that the moon itself has fallen into the cup. It means the coup of darkness was happened. And the lack of romantic bow is evident in the dark, and the arrows of moonlight are no longer thrown by the eyelashes of night. There is a great thought to the wolf itself, and the wolf moon is in January, so that's right. But there is also a note, because you bring in Wall Street, the thought might be just of the wolf itself. And the fact that he offered up superior and inferior positions are swapped. The full moon seeds to no moon or new moon. So you get the total lack of moon in that moment. So there is that note of positions being swapped. And in that time, there's a calming. Because as you get to the full moon, more of the wolves howl and more of the lunacy with people occurs as well. So the thought with the Wall Street wolves, they're happy, crack walnuts with the tails, green grassland. Yes, they're eager feeders when things are hot. And it also rolls right back around to the thought, they become cats after defeat because they don't take the, it again has got that superior and inferior positions have been swapped. And sometimes you lose when you play heavily with other people's money as well as your own, and you don't take, or you get too greedy in the point you want to take everything rather than leave something on the table, and in that leaving in that greed you lose. And the idea of being allergic to water, not wall, is true, because they always come back for more. That's why they call it. There's that something about I can't remember it now. Oh, ear against the wall. It used to actually be a place when it was New Amsterdam. It was an actual outline of the city itself, the wall.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool. I all of a sudden have an image in my head of the little Dutch boy who's with his finger in the hole in the dam. And, but yeah, I like how in that poem he does reference like a kind, different kinds of wolves. Like it almost seems like the real wolf that walks through the forest, the Wall Street wolf, and even the mythological elements of the wolf. That was really cool. All right. Are you still there?
Yep.
Okay. Up next, we have Be Still, Wolf by Louise B., and it goes like this. There is something at work in my soul, a strange thing that squirms when the day is too dull. There is something that knocks at my heart, terrible and dark when the day is too bright. There is something that pulls at my brain, pure danger beckons when night draws in. There is a wild thing in me I conquer with this refrain. Be still, my soul. Be quiet, my heart. Be strong, my brain. In the end, it was my two bare feet, restless and rebellious, that set me free. With abandon, I run and howl when the moon is full or on All Hallows' Eve. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And she took Mary Shelley's quote, there is something at work in my soul which I do not understand. I like that. A nice touch with the double end of this. A two-parter, so to speak. You got those first three, four stanzas. Well, the first three, then an offering. There is a wild thing in me I conquer with this refrain. Be still my soul, be quiet my heart, be strong my brain. That's the kind of the turning point. In the end, it was my two bare feet resting from the bellies that set me free. With abandon, I run and howl when the moon is full or on All Hallows' Eve. Well, there's that note. When it's full or on All Hallows' Eve, the option. I got to have food on some Halloween. But the idea is letting your hair down when the note approves of itself. And that is the thought of running wild and free in the moment and enjoying that life outside. All right, what's your deal?
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. Yeah, I really like how this starts out first, even the title. And it starts out with the idea of trying to control the wildness inside of you. Oh, and I have to say, it's really great to see a new name. I don't think I've seen Louise B. before, so, you know, always enjoy seeing new poets. I'll have to check out more of her work, and I hope we get to see more of her writes in our shows. But, yeah, I like how this is at first about struggling to control mentally and emotionally that wild side and part of you. And then in the last couple of stanzas, it becomes that whole idea of embracing, you know, using your feet, taking off your shoes. There actually has been studies done about health and about walking barefoot and how people who walk barefoot, like outside, like it does something for the positive energy for the body. And so I like that the restlessness and the rebellious is let out simply by the act of running. And that end stanza is great. With abandon, I run and howl. You know, and I also thought it was clever that she referenced Hallows' Eve. So definitely an excellent write on being wild and free, and very well done.
What you got next?
All right. Up next, I have Inferno by Daniel Dechino. And go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Inferno by Daniel Dechino. Top 9. Hell is empty and all the devils are here. That's Shakespeare. abandoned the hellfire, the earthly existence, are we all upon entering life? And for the hand of Virgil I reach, hopelessness I find, as he is note that where in sight. Demons and devils, tempestuses and sirens, challenge the eternity of soul, but march on not do I, if St. Peter's judgment I wish to face. Through the lure and logic of doubters and disbelievers, and with reason in what I know, guides an easy path, and faith in what I don't, calls me to further my quest. And with discovery of life comes discovery of pleasures, from the temptation of the siren song, to the gluttonous grasp of devouring carnage, I live life's lust. But Dionysus, be not the god I seek, for it's through his craving he seeks satisfaction when craving never ends. And when my desire took over, so did the greedy grasp of my weaknesses and take advantage and leave me with nothing but emptiness. They are starry souls that take and take, but where I'm going, no possessions can be brought. In pondering reflection of the selfishness of men, anger overtakes. Curse those wicked men who take what they do not need from those that do. What kind of world is this? Mankind's day driven by meaningless self-satisfaction. What kind of God creates a world for his children filled with such torment? For all I have seen, I know now nothing but rage, and at this moment this rage overtakes. For on the common street that I walk, within the common town that I live, I witness to what I judge to be criminal acts, and with violent words do I confront the guilty, and so with violence am I met, blood and pain my reward, and my companions into the unconscious. Upon wakening, frightening shame takes over, for I become the devil's pawn with all I have done. Of what other horrors does past remembrance hold, of what fraud and treachery have I laid down in the name of my quest? I lay here bruised and battered in the trenches of my own furious temper, a fraudulent shell of a man once born. I can think of nothing but my own treacherous past and those I have betrayed. Owned by pleasure, fueled by heresy, consumed by anger, I feel so cold, like there's no warmth in my life. And in this realm of ice and frozen wind, I trudge on. I trudge forward, on to meet my fate, the Satan himself. Years upon years, walking in regret, till the memories that haunted me fade like an ancient weathered cemetery. An old and broken man, I know who I am. I've seen the hells that the earth does offer, and I've been through the hells that I have created, and I can finally see the end. Satan himself, up ahead, buried to the waist in the ice world that I walk. So enormous is he, one can barely see his head from the ground. As I walk up to him, and I watch as he scans the horizon, looking over all. And now, standing directly in front of him, I know that down through the ice, filing down the body of Satan himself is the way out. A noise from above like a machine crying calls, and I look up, and he is staring directly at me. He calls my name in a more comforting voice than I expected, and says, "Do you think you deserve to leave this place?" "No," I answer. "Not more than any other." And he turns his gaze away. Down his body I climb. For months it seems. Down. Slowly turns to up. A golden staircase ahead, laced with blue and green. And more scared now than I have ever been. I head upward and pray. And poem.
All right, Pam.
What you got on that note?
Well, I have to say, first of all, man, that was an excellent read. You know, I really, wow, this is epic. I always enjoy Daniel's poetry. I have to say, I think this is one of my favorites. You know, he oftentimes has this tone of like self-searching, like searching inside yourself, of battling inner demons. I like the reference to, in the first stanza, "And for the hand of Virgil I reach." That's Virgil, that had to do with Dante's Inferno, right? Or am I thinking wrong?
Yeah, but Virgil's also what, the Archangel Righteousness or something like that.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. And let's see what else. And when my desire took over, so did the greedy grasp of my weakness and take advantage and leave me with nothing but emptiness. They are sorry souls that take and take for where I'm going. My possessions can be brought. No possessions can be brought. Yeah, and that, you know, I like that, that again, here's a poem that touches on the idea that you can't bring it with you. I like how this comes across as having a very almost like dreamlike quality, like the idea of a nightmare that you can't escape from. And this idea of somebody looking at themselves, looking at the paths they've chosen to walk throughout their life. And I like especially like when it gets to the point where it says, a noise from above like a machine crying calls, and I look up and he is staring directly at me. He calls my name in a more comforting voice than I expected and says, do you think you deserve to leave this place? No, I answer, not more than any other. And he turns his gaze away. Down his body I climb for months, it seems. There's such a wisdom in those words of, no, I answer, not more than any other. In the realization that we are no better off or no worse off than anybody else. You know, we cannot pass, point the finger of judgment. I also like in the ending stanza how he describes a golden staircase laced with blue and green and more sacred now. Like, the typical, like, colors you think of when you think of heaven are, like, golden, silver, pearl, you know. But I think it was really great to throw in blue and green. And I don't know if that's an actual biblical reference or from an actual, like, somewhere. But to me, when I see the colors blue and green, I think of the earth and the sky. And I think about how we have such spiritual and sacred experiences that are available right here, right now, on Earth. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yep. Got a bite on the note of self-indulgent, indignation that drives one self-righteous indignation that drives one's bully pulpit to the point where it becomes just as greedy and dark as everyone else's wickedness in the moment, making him no better a reflection than those they put down in the first place. And that's sadly something that nobody ever takes your reality's part. The balance of the equation is walking the path deliberately without that self-righteous indignation that can bend one to the other side, or taking so far advantage of all of those sins that you've been cleansed with to begin with, and walking them so far over the other side of the edge that you have no redress except to walk that line down through the act. Through the world of hell, the way you find that frozen entity and the thought of the climbing out. That's kind of a Jacob's ladder of thoughts, working yourself further down into the abyss so that the turnaround sees you actually climbing out the other side.
I like that. Great observations there, Rex. Very cool. All right. Up next, we have tell me how to pronounce that word there, Rex, and then I can read the rest of the poem. Revenant. All right. Gray Wolf. And it goes like this. All heart and soul and love I gave, my life was yours, a willing slave. Eternal bond, past death I crave, now call me forth from lonely grave. Reunion lies in shrouded mist, memory held when last we kissed, for only thoughts of you persist and pull me on to fearful tryst. I seek your hand in darkened hall, the walls twixt life and death now fall. Your ballroom gown stitched from my pall, let music of beyond enthrall. Dance with me when the moon is full and dark of night. Dance with my soul, with shadows deep, embrace, console, stitch me closed and make me whole. End poem.
Great read, Ian. I like the mono rhyme for this, for each and every stanza, and the offset mono rhyme. That last stanza works well too. Full soul, console, and whole. They work in the offset. Now, as far as the thought he took down with him, do you believe in destiny, that even powers of time can be altered for a single purpose? Just kind of hits on notes of love on the one hand, but it also hits on death. Where was that? Stitch me closed and make me whole. Kind of hits on that note of the final passage. It used to be when you died at sea, they'd stitch you up in canvas before pushing you over and into the great beyond as your final burial. And some earthbound people did the same thing, except they didn't tend to stitch you up. They kind of wrapped you into in the muslin or some other sorts, and then buried you underneath the soil. So it hits on love and death, and there is a touch of obsession, although it's kind of on the subtle side. I seek your hand in darkened hall, the walls with life and death now fall, your bathroom gown stitched from my fall, that music of beyond and so on. That kind of hits all three notes, love, death, and obsession right there. And the reunion lies in shroudedness, memory held when last we kissed, is almost an offering up of life in the moment to walk eternal. All right, how about you?
Yeah, I have to say, I agree. There is kind of a sense of obsession in here, but also like a sense of loss, and you know, especially since, you know, it to me, you know, like when it starts with all heart and soul and love I gave, you know, that whole idea of just giving and giving to someone, and then they taken away. It's almost like it's the death of love itself. And I have to say, yeah, his rhyme and the meter was like just spot on. I like the use of the word twixt rather than between. I thought that was a really nice touch. And in dark of night, dance with my soul, with shadows deep, embrace, console, stitch me closed and make me whole. Those ending lines are probably the most emotive to me, in the whole idea that you're asking the person who broke your heart to stitch it back together. And I think this works really well on that, for that Bram Stoker prompt. So excellent write and very well done. All right. And the last poem for tonight, and the rest will be carried over to another show, is Happy Halloween by Metaphysical Migraine. And go ahead, Rex.
Happy Halloween by Metaphysical Migraine. Happy Halloween, says this host, and with a smile to shock and shake, plumes of smoke drifting up. Oh, stop that again. Happy Halloween, says this host, and with a smile to shock and shake, plumes of smoke drifting from my ghost, puffing through a gritted toothache, yelps and whelps help feed my full plate. Harboring a harsh lash of laughs, All Hallows' Eve is a death bait, lacerated lip rip or axe, lines of decapitated dogs, only psychotic feral friends, welts from scars from the bell of flogs, even collapsed lungs on my trends, empty threats of throwing a voice, now bloody bones and bones their choice. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. You know, I like this one. I think it's a great poem to end on. I will say I don't see a connection to a particular prompt, but I just enjoyed the fact that she throws in the Happy Halloween, And there's a darkness to it, but at the same time, there's almost a lightheartedness too. You know, with what I really like is the ending. Last few stanzas really reminded me of like those teenage horror movies with the ghost mask, Scream. It reminds me of, you know, like how the where it says only psychotic frail friends and empty threats or of throwing a voice, now bloody bones and phones a choice. It reminds me of how they're always running for the phone and it's not working in the, like those kind of horror movies. And there's just something about it in those lines that kind of has a twisted humor to it that I really enjoyed. So I thought this was very well done.
Well, it's an acrostic for one thing. You look down the left side, it says Happy Halloween.
Oh, look at that. It is. I missed that. Very cool.
That's neat. And it does run an AB live stream. But I like, you look at the top, Happy Halloween says this toast, and with a smile, the shock and shake. Plumes of smoke drifting from my ghost, puffing through a gritted toothache. They're kind of offering up, yeah, Halloween might be fun, but the more likely indication of what comes out of that are toothaches, the more the rotted teeth and the candy yelps and whelps help feed my full plate. Kind of hits down that notion, the host might just be a dentist.
Absolutely.
Harboring a harsh
there.
Lash of last, Hallow's Eve is a death date. Lacerated lip, let's rip rash, lines of decapitating dogs, only psychotic feral fiends. Feral friends, whilst the scar still in that. But there's a bit of a nice alliteration which kind of makes one want to flail in the mouth. Empty threats of throwing a voice, my bloody bones, and phones of choice. I like that thought. Bloody bones and phones of choice.
That was a really cool thought. And yeah, you're right. Awesome alliteration. So, well, great show tonight, Rex. I really enjoyed the poetry.
Yep. Got a few more to go.
Yep. And I'm thinking we'll get that this week. But I'd everyone to join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Twisted Tuesdays. And poetry inspired by the short stories of Edgar Allan Poe. And what do you got happening for Sunday, Rex?
You pick the song that you want to do as an entreat to Halloween, or maybe a parody. It could be Don't Fear the Reaper. It could be Running with the Devil. It could be any song, Witchy Woman, Evil Woman. It doesn't matter. You pick it, have fun with it, and bring it to the table.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. All right. Well, have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Till later.